The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Another beautiful day here at Edstone. The work continues going forward. So much to get to on today's program. We're working on an article right now for the Trumpet website on the unity deal reached between Benjamin Netanyahu's government and his, I guess, what would you say, the opposition party, Benny Gantz. In any event, they reached this pact last night. They talked about it, I guess, in recent weeks. But it allows for Netanyahu to stay in power as prime minister for 18 months, and then the two will switch. I guess Gantz will then become prime minister, and Bibi Netanyahu will be the deputy prime minister. Brent Nachtigall is working on an article even as we speak, and he's gone through the 14-page coalition agreement, which, as he says, is anything but a unifying force. It really reveals a lot of mistrust, between these two, but this is what they were able to accomplish to avoid a fourth election in August. Israel, just like the United Kingdom, just like the United States, deeply divided. You see these divisions in all of our nations, and of course these world crises, they're just really, they're opening sores in so many ways. Like, what was it? I think it was Friedman. We quoted from a source the other day that said, well, you know, this crisis, the current pandemic, while it might not be the direct cause of so many of the problems and difficulties that we have, it certainly is exposing them all the more. That's coming out of Little Israel. In the United States, you've got all kinds of things happening over the last 24 hours, with the price for oil plummeting to less than zero. They can't get rid of it. Nobody's using it. My wife was just at the Birmingham airport today. She said it was like a ghost town. They only had parking spaces at the very lowest level of the parking garage, which is usually packed. Everything else is roped off. And she goes inside the airport, and no one was there. They had to wait. They had to sit and wait just for an attendant to show up. This is the second largest airport in the United Kingdom. Total lockdown. Total lockdown. Of course, you've got the ban on all these travels, this disruption in travel. And then last night, President Trump, he announces that he's going to effectively ban immigration or temporarily suspend it. This says here, U.S. President Donald Trump said he'll temporarily suspend all immigration to the U.S. because of the coronavirus. He said the move would protect Americans' jobs. After almost 22 million people in the U.S. were put out of work, 22 million, and so he wants to protect their jobs. And of course, the radical left, they're all for locking up ordinary Americans in their homes, but they want to keep the borders, those borders, wide open. They want unrestricted immigration. Representative Don Beyer, he says that President Trump's looking for someone to blame for his own failure. And then Senator Kamala Harris, she said Trump failed to take this crisis seriously from day one. His abandonment of his role as president has cost lives, and now he's shamelessly politicizing this pandemic to double down on his anti-immigrant agenda. So there you go. He's a racist. He hates immigrants. We've got to have all of those borders open. We've got to have the southern border wide open. But now, all of you citizens, you stay locked in your homes and don't come out. This is their dream. This is their dream utopia. President Trump was asked yesterday about, of course, his opponents are trying very, very hard to politicize this pandemic, to attack him, to say that he didn't react soon enough. He had a rally in late February, so he didn't take it seriously. And here's how he responded to that question, or to that charge. This is clip four.
And yet in January, a certain date, you know the date better than I do, we put on a ban of China, where China can't come in. And before March, we put on a ban on Europe, where Europe can't come in. So how could you say I wasn't taking it seriously? Do you know, I put on a ban on China before anybody in this country died. I put on a ban. And so you tell me, Nancy Pelosi was having, she wanted to have a street party in Chinatown in San Francisco at the end of February. That's a month later.
Yeah, that's right. She was waltzing through Chinatown saying, don't be worried about this virus. Come on out and celebrate with us. Bill de Blasio was doing the same thing in New York. And he was, as I've said, right up until the national emergency was declared, he was saying nothing to worry about here. This is just, for most people, it's like a flu or a sniffle. And then it became the war footing. It's so serious, he had to let prisoners out of jail because they were in danger of catching this virus. It turns out some of those prisoners have returned to do what they do best, commit crimes. Here's what he said about that yesterday, clip five.
We do see some recidivism. I don't have the exact numbers. We see some. I've not seen a huge amount, but any amount is obviously troubling. And I think it's unconscionable just on a human level that folks were shown mercy, and this is what some of them have done.
But it's President Trump that he should be investigated, President Trump, not all these other leaders. They've handled it just right, just right. You see why the president takes to Twitter the way that he does, and you see why he goes after those reporters in those briefings. This is how hard he has to work just to get the truth out. Because those reporters, we'll talk more about the media here in just a second, but they will come along, and it doesn't matter if they said the opposite 3 days ago. It's as if the whole world starts the day they walk into that briefing room. Unrestricted flow of immigrants, prisoners set free, and ordinary Americans sentenced to house arrest. This is a liberal utopian dream. Well, the oil prices, as I say, collapsing yesterday. The president did announce that he's, I guess, going to build up the U.S. reserves while the oil is this cheap. But look, they can't sell it because nobody's traveling. Think about all that's happened here in just the last month. Here in the UK, at the Telegraph, Alistair Heath, he said that we've entered a mini economic ice age, and its impact on our society will be horrendous. Look at what we're doing to ourselves. The cure is causing so many more problems than the disease itself. You'd never know it from the major media, but it is. He writes, the economy will collapse. This is the UK. The economy will collapse by 35% this quarter and by 12.8% for the year, according to the budget office. The worst full-year decline since the Great Frost. I'm not sure when that is. I'll have to ask Richard. It says unemployment will shoot up to 2.1 million. Shoot up by 2.1 million, sorry, to 3.4 million, 10% of the workforce. It says the fiscal costs matters. Fiscal costs matter less, but they are equally horrendous. The Treasury will borrow $273 billion this year, taking the deficit to 13.9% of GDP. Not quite the 25% seen in World War II, but close. Says, for the first time, the state will spend over $1 trillion, or 1 trillion pounds, rather, taking public expenditure to 51.7% of national income. Just devastating, the effects this is having on the economy. The impact on our society will be horrendous. And yet you have some commentators coming from the radical left that want more from government. They want a bigger expansion of government. Richard tweeted out this article yesterday. This is at The Times. This woman writing, we need Big Brother to beat this virus. We need Big Brother. That's an actual headline. It's like it's straight out of George Orwell's book. We need Big Brother. She talks about some of these draconian measures that have been put in place and says that really, we need to go farther. We need to take it a step farther. She says, don't let the civil liberties lobby blind us to the fact that greater state surveillance, including ID cards, is required. We want more state surveillance. It's we don't have enough. If you've ever taken a trip through the UK, there are cameras everywhere. And here is one who wants more of it. And as you know, from some local areas, they're calling on citizens to turn in their neighbors if they see something that violates the stay-at-home measures. In the broader picture, the Telegraph says, the lockdown is a recipe for mass global unrest. Now, we've made that point before as well. I won't go through the article itself, but boy, Satan is setting the stage for an explosion. We think it's bad now. A recipe for mass global unrest. And of course, the media, they're right there doing everything that they can to incite anger, to scare people, to terrify the general public. And there's no let up. I just kind of brushed aside this video of Chris Cuomo emerging from his basement. He got coronavirus and was broadcasting from his basement for CNN. But then when you think about his own violation of those stay-at-home measures, he came out of his house and got into an altercation with a bike rider on Easter weekend. I think it was a different house than the one he's in currently, where the basement is. So he had been outdoors with his family. But then yesterday, he's filmed coming up the stairwell from his basement. He's finally received word from the CDC that he's out of quarantine. So they made a big production out of this. And it's just fake news. He's been up and out of his basement. He admitted as much. There's a police report even that proves it. And yet, here he is yesterday. He's carefully staging this grand entrance into the first floor of his house. Here's a little bit from him re-emerging from quarantine, clip one.
All right, here is the official re-entry from the basement. Cleared by CDC. A little sweaty. Just worked out. It happens. This is what I've been dreaming of, literally for weeks. My wife, yeah, right. She was cleared by the CDC. She doesn't have fever. She doesn't have the symptoms anymore. More than 7 days from her quarantine. But we're still a little scared, so I'll just give you one of these. Just give you one of these. Just give you one of these. Just give you one of these.
So they're still scared. They're both cleared by the CDC, but they're still scared, so they won't touch each other. And this, according to his video, this is his first time out of the basement, which is not the truth. It's fake news. Fake news on CNN. And it's kind of a dumb story in many respects, but it does illustrate what we're having to try to weed our way through just to get to some facts, just to get to some basic facts about the disease, for example, about the spread of the disease, about its lethality. How lethal is it? How deadly is it? Well, you won't know it if you tune into CNN or MSNBC, as Tucker Carlson pointed out last night. I think this was last night on his program. These media types are just taking this as their opportunity, really, to spotlight themselves, to talk about themselves. This is clip 11.
Many in the media seem to be enjoying this crisis, and they are. It's been a great opportunity to talk at great length about their all-time favorite subject, which is themselves, and how much more impressive they are than you.
Their all-time favorite subject. And so you have a lot of them talking about how this crisis is impacting them, how hard this crisis has been for them. Here again, after seeing the Brian Stelter footage over the weekend, I thought for sure there's no way we'd need to play this on the program. But it again illustrates. It again illustrates just how much we're being set up here. How all of this is just carefully framed and staged to try to keep people terrified. That's been the agenda from day one. Remember Peggy Noonan's column? Don't panic. That's terrible advice. Of course we have to panic. And here's Brian Stelter saying, look, it's okay to not be okay. If you're panicking, if you're devastated by this, that's okay, he said. This is Brian Stelter. He's also at CNN, clip 2.
It's okay to not be okay right now. All of us are grieving, whether we sense it or not. All of us have lost something in the past few weeks. We're all grieving. But I have to admit to you, I had tried to bottle it all up. I guess I was trying to be stoic for my wife and kids. It wasn't until this Friday night that I hit a wall. I was supposed to be finishing my nightly newsletter that I mentioned earlier. But I couldn't do it. I couldn't get it done. I was so gutted by the death toll. I was so angry about the ignorance in Washington. I was so worried about family members and friends who are at risk of losing their jobs or who have already lost their jobs. It was that mix of emotions that many of you also feel. And that's when the tears came. We don't talk about this on TV much. I think we should change that. Look, let's remember, we've never lived through something quite like this. We have nothing to compare this with.
Nothing to compare it to except the flu season from 2 years ago. There is nothing to compare with this, he said, on national television. Not the flu season 2 years ago, not the swine flu from 2009, not the flu epidemic from, I think it was 1959, tens of thousands. And then, of course, the Spanish flu from 1918. Nothing! 9/11 doesn't compare to this. This is the most terrifying, the most deadly disease in history. They're still saying this, even as the facts begin to come in. Bill Maher, he, again, over the weekend, I guess he's doing his program from home like so many of these broadcasters, and even he, this is someone from the radical left. Even he can't believe some of these headlines. Even he can't believe how this is being hyped. And in this segment here, this clip that I'll play, I don't recommend you watch his clips necessarily because he usually has them full of profanity. But in this particular segment, he's going through all of these headlines, all of these publications, how that this is being reported. And here he is, clip 10.
Last month, the Washington Post ran the headline, "It feels like a war zone," with this picture. This is not a war zone. This is a man with a box of eggs. And I've never seen a war zone with this much bacon. Or how about this one? Horrifying simulation reveals the dangers of jogging during the coronavirus pandemic. Look, this virus is easy to catch, but if you can't avoid it jogging, you can't outrun much. 2 weeks ago, Inside Edition said 76,000 in the world had died, so some are making comparisons to the apocalypse. The apocalypse? Really? But the New York Times? They used the same word last week. Braced for apocalyptic surge, New York avoids worst so far. And this was an article about how much better the city was doing than expected. Projections had them needing 58,000 hospital beds, and it turned out they needed a quarter of that. Still bad, but you don't have to put hot sauce on a jalapeno.
That's the comedian Bill Maher pointing out some of these crazy headlines. He went on to say that there was a headline recently at the New York Times, "It's terrifying, millions more out of work." That was front page above the fold. It's terrifying. And he said, when have we ever had headlines like this? When did you, when the planes went into the World Trade Center in 2001, when did you see a headline? It's terrifying. The United States was attacked by radical Islamists. The event spoke for itself. But they have to put terrifying, they have to put apocalypse in the headline because that's what they want you to think. That's how they want you to view this. Millions upon millions upon millions dying. Nothing like it in history. Nothing like it in history? We have nothing to compare this with? James Dellingpole at the Breitbart website, he says he talks about the George Cross, how that this is given to it's the highest civilian award that can be given in Britain. And every once in a while, they'll award it to a group, an organization. They did it for the people of Malta back in 1942. King George VI, it says, conferred a collective GC or George Cross on the island of Malta for its heroic endurance during a wartime siege lasting nearly 2.5 years and near constant attack by the Germans. It says Malta was bombed relentlessly day and night. Its population was driven to the brink of starvation. 30,000 buildings were destroyed or damaged. 1,300 civilians were killed. 2,300 airmen killed or wounded. Also destroyed were 2 aircraft carriers, 4 cruisers, 19 destroyers, 38 submarines, 369 fighters. It says Malta fully earned the GC, which it now sports proudly on its flag. I wonder how the Maltese feel about proposals by Tory peer Lord Ashcroft and Sun newspaper that a collective George Cross should now be bestowed on Britain's National Health Service. So now the NHS, they're right up there. This is, keep in mind, this is World War Flu. He says, so far, more than 20 NHS doctors and nurses have died with COVID-19, and unfortunately, they're unlikely to be the last. So there have been deaths. And to go back to even what Brian Stelter was saying, for some people, this has been tragic. But these are newsmen. These are newsmen trying to hype it, trying to keep you scared. The apocalypse, a war zone, as they take a photograph of a grocery store that looks perfectly normal. It says here, so far, the more than 20 NHS doctors and nurses have died with COVID-19, and unfortunately, they're unlikely to be the last. But while every one of those deaths is a sad loss, this is not the equivalent of being bombed and starved into submission with 110 straight weeks of earth-shattering attacks by Nazi Germany and fascist Italy. This is not World War II. Let's not blow this out of proportion. Let's get some perspective, he's saying. There are things that we can compare it to. And using the ones he's giving, There is no comparison. The Maltese under siege, basically, for 2 years? It says, Lord Ashcroft's proposal seems to me part of a wider campaign by Britain's failing political class to rebrand the utter mess up they are making of the coronavirus pandemic as something magnificent, heroic, inspirational, and redolent of Britain's finest hour in World War II. And it really isn't. At best, he says, at best, this is a phony war. This is a phony war. Dellingpole says he's going through Andrew Roberts' biography of Churchill. That's one that we've referred to and used a fair bit in our Churchill class this past year. And he compares the two time periods, which is a fascinating study in and of itself, because you see a lot of the problems that we have in the media, for example, today, they were there in the 1930s as well. And it's the same with the politicians. As Dellingpole points out, it says, what's clear is that British politicians then were just as useless, craven, party political, short-sighted, and despicable then as they are now. But the difference, listen to this, the difference is that the wartime government had a man of vision and backbone and purpose to knock their heads together and get things done. The difference then is that they had one man. Think about this. Isaiah 3 says there's no more men like that. We don't, the strong military men, the leaders, the eloquent orators, they're a thing of the past. In fact, it's prophesied in Isaiah 3 that God would take them away. My father makes the point about Ezekiel 33, the watchmen of the people. They finally did turn over the reins of government to Winston Churchill there in May of 1940. It was almost too late. But this was one man of vision and backbone and purpose. And he turned it around for an entire nation. Well, God certainly is more involved, like this coronavirus trumpet I pointed out yesterday, the latest one, the April edition. He's certainly involved in these events that we're seeing play out. But compare the leaders today to Winston Churchill. And you could do the same with respect to the media. And my father, in the Winston Churchill booklet, by the way, he talks about what the media did then and how you see some very similar weaknesses in the media today. In fact, it's so much worse. They're actively, in the U.S., they're actively working against America, American ideals, American institutions, the American presidency. They're doing everything that they can to undermine the leadership in the White House and to extend, any way that they can, to extend the economic suffering as far as it will go. Listen to George Stephanopoulos. He's, I think, at CBS or ABC, maybe. But he's talking to Dr. Fauci yesterday about how many tests, how many coronavirus tests need to be done before we can even think about getting back to normal. This is clip 3.
But you mentioned those experts who believe we need to be doing far more. There's a new study out from Harvard this morning that says we're going to need to be doing something like 5 million tests a day in early June to start opening up to 20 million tests a day to fully reopen as soon as possible by the end of the summer. We're only doing about 150,000 tests a day right now.
So he's worse than Fauci. Even Fauci said, well, we need to bump it up a little bit to a couple, 3 million per week. Stephanopoulos is suggesting 20 million tests per day in the United States. That would take you right through the United States in like 3 weeks, I think. Maybe 2 weeks. 20 million per day. It's as if that's all that we have to do. The U.S. government, U.S. officials, health officials, everybody get involved in the testing before we can even think about getting back to normal. What planet are these people living on? It's just pure fantasy. Anything and everything that they can do to extend the lockdown, to extend the economic turmoil that it's causing. In Mail Online, it says here, England, Wales, and Scotland announced 450 more coronavirus deaths, the fewest number for a fortnight. As leading expert argues, the UK's crisis peaked before lockdown. So when was the peak? If the deaths come 2-3 weeks after the infections, then when exactly was the peak? And if, like I said yesterday, if the curve is flattened, wasn't that the objective to begin with? To keep the hospitals from being overwhelmed? Clearly, they're not overwhelmed. It says here, the sharp fall adds to growing evidence. This is from the Daily Mail. Growing evidence that the peak of the UK's epidemic has blown over. It comes as a medicine professor at the University of Oxford has argued the peak was actually about a month ago, a week before lockdown started on March 23, and that the draconian measures people are now living with were unnecessary. They're basically paraphrasing from Professor Hannigan. We played a clip from him yesterday. But he said, look, the peak was March 16th before we even went into lockdown. So why are we continuing with the lockdown? That's his point. It says in the Mail piece, he said ministers lost sight of the evidence and rushed into a nationwide quarantine 6 days after being instructed by scientific advisors who he claims have been consistently wrong during the crisis. That would be the imperial model. Neil Ferguson's team of 40 or 50 scholars, they have been consistently wrong. Listen to Mr. Hannigan, again, a professor at Oxford, what he said to BBC just last night, clip 13.
Initial measures were important. The encouragement of social distancing and the hand washing, very important measures. And that's what we should bring into the lockdown phase. In some parts of the country, probably like London, actually, the major outbreak occurred before the actual lockdown. But across the rest of the country, it's had some impact. So what we've got to do is, as quick as we went into the lockdown, we've got to be brave now to come out of it.
And he's suggesting we come out of it by the end of this week. We've got to be brave. We need leadership that's courageous, that has backbone, that has vision. We'll see if that happens. I can say this. Richard was saying Mr. Hennigan's been on quite a few news programs, so at least they're here in the UK, at least they're giving a little bit of a platform to another expert. In the U.S., it seems like if it's not in the Fauci crowd, well, they're to be rejected. They love the experts. As long as the experts are engaged in perverted science, as Churchill said back in 1940, they love the scientists as long as they're from the left wing. This virologist, he too is from Oxford. He's from QMU London. But quoting him, it says here, personally, I would say the best advice is to, he's basically commenting on all these other virologists on TV, the ones that are out there scaring people. And his suggestion is, I would say the best advice is to spend less time watching TV news, which is sensational and not very good. Personally, I view this COVID outbreak as akin to a bad winter influenza epidemic. He says we are suffering from a media epidemic. That's the problem here, he says. It's the media. It's the media epidemic. It's not the disease. It's how it's being reported. It's how it's being covered. A few of us saw this video last night from Australian Sky News presenter Andrew Bolt. Wouldn't it be great if we could get some of their talent over to Sky News here in the UK? But they've got some pretty good conservative commentators on Sky News Down Under. And listen to Andrew Bolt in his commentary from yesterday, clip 12.
You are being told absolute porkies about this coronavirus to scare you into thinking all these bans are lifesavers. You can't even play golf, even on your own.
But I don't need to play golf. No one needs to play golf. I might want to, but me playing golf simply isn't worth someone's life.
Can you believe that, Premier? A round of golf, keeping your distance in the fresh open air, nice sunshine, that's going to kill someone? This is a virus which overwhelmingly spreads indoors, not in the open air. This study looked at more than 300 outbreaks in China involving three or more people, and it said, we identified only a single outbreak in an outdoor environment, which involved two cases. I suspect it's probably the same story here, more or less, since half our deaths have been of people who are either cooped up in a cruise ship or in an aged care home or hospital. I get critics saying, shut up with my dangerous talk. You just want to go and kill my grandmother or whatever. They say it's precisely because we can't do things like sit on a park bench or a Bondi beach that we've just had 71 deaths when the experts told us to get ready for up to 150,000 deaths. So many of them, in fact, that we would have run out of emergency beds to treat all the dying by, April 5. Couple of weeks ago. You're being absolutely snowed. The models that our politicians were listening to a month ago when they freaked 150,000 could die, they were plainly wrong. Yet Victoria's chief medical officer is still waving them around like, oh, no, they were right all along, stay in your houses and thank us for it. Now, if all these bans came at no cost, you'd think, better safe than sorry. Let's keep going for another 5 months. Let's not go outside. But they do cost, don't they? They cost you jobs. They cost you your savings. They cost you your freedom. And we're now starting to see the pain of them, the depression, the suicides, the massive debt that we're going to have to one day repay. So I suggest you start asking questions of our politicians. Why did you panic? And when, please when, will you stop?
When will you stop? When will it end? This self-inflicted wound. No one really knows. What a cost, though. What a price. The cure so much worse than the disease itself. Well, over these past several weeks, we've had quite a few revelations on the Trump-Russia collusion. I haven't gotten into that much. In recent weeks, when we come back, we'll give you a few more updates on that, as well as some sound bites that pertain to it as well. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
With more and more documents being released or made public regarding the Crossfire Hurricane investigation into the Trump campaign, the Federalist had this to say about the revelations. These declassifications reveal more devastating details in the Spygate saga. Here are some of the revelations. For one, the FBI always intended to spy on the Trump campaign. That was the intent from the beginning when they started spying on Carter Page and had other things going on as well. The intent was to go after the campaign. Another one, the FBI failed to brief President Trump about its Page suspicions. So they said Carter Page was a threat. He was a Russian agent, but they never did go and tell Donald Trump. They never did try to help the man who was duly elected as president of the United States. Instead, they used it as a pretext to go after President Trump himself, and they certainly did spy on the Trump administration. Well, this other article, or rather this Federalist piece, also talks about the lies of Adam Schiff. And then another point it makes further on, the FBI relied solely on fake news to support portions of the FISA applications. The fake news, CNN, here again, our friends at CNN and MSNBC that were there peddling these lies, taking the Steele dossier, the very first line of it, as we've noted before, they ran right with it. Every time I see Jim Sciutto at CNN, I think immediately of that bombshell revelation. He and Jake Tapper, I think there were a couple of others on the panel as well. This goes back to January of 2017. This is after all those meetings, and Jim Comey briefed the president, talked about the news hook. And then Jake Tapper, CNN, they were having these discussions with Jim Clapper, John Brennan. Everything was carefully orchestrated. It had to be framed in a certain way so that they could take down the president. That's always been their aim. Let's go back to 2017. This is from January 10th, so a little over 3 years ago, clip 14.
CNN has learned that the nation's top intelligence officials provided information to President-elect Donald Trump and to President Barack Obama last week about claims of Russian efforts to compromise President-elect Trump. The information was provided as part of last week's classified intelligence briefings regarding Russian efforts to undermine the U.S. elections.
So that's Jake Tapper setting it up. And then as they expand their discussion, he hands it over to Jim Sciutto, who says this, clip 15.
Your multiple U.S. officials with direct knowledge of the briefings tell CNN that classified documents on Russian interference in the 2016 U.S. election presented last week to President Obama and to President-elect Trump included allegations that Russian operatives claimed to have compromising personal and financial information about Mr. Trump. The allegations were part of a two-page synopsis. These were based on memos compiled by a former British intelligence operative whose past work U.S. intelligence officials consider credible.
So we now know that all of that was based on lies, fake news. So yesterday, when this same CNN organization and Jim Sciutto is talking about this tight relationship between President Trump, We've supposed to move on. We've supposedly moved on. Trump, you had Trump Russia, you had Ukraine, you had impeachment. Now it's this handling of the coronavirus. But listen to Jim Sciutto's report yesterday. He's presenting this as, well, this is something you may have missed in these last few weeks because of the pandemic. This is clip 6.
President Trump, and he may have missed this, has been warming up of late to his old friend, Russia's President Vladimir Putin. The two leaders have made a record-breaking number of phone calls to each other recently. And some of the president's own former advisors say that Putin may be using the coronavirus pandemic to realize his long-held goal of edging closer to Trump.
So the same old story, recycled again. They won't let it go. The first line of the dossier, the very first line, he is a Russian agent. The president of the United States. And now, of course, Vladimir Putin's playing him like a fiddle because of this pandemic. He's had a long-held goal of drawing closer to President Trump. And these the record-setting number of phone calls, I think it's revealed later in the report that he made something like two or three phone calls in a week to Vladimir Putin, if you can believe it. Here's a little bit more from Shudo's report, clip 7.
And the U.S. intelligence community assesses Russia is again trying to interfere in the 2020 election, as it did in 2016.
It's the fact that Trump is allowing Putin to assert that U.S.-Russian relations are back in business, and that basically we've turned the page, all is forgiven, and that any Russian past behavior doesn't matter going forward in light of coronavirus.
So President Trump's giving him a free pass. He's effectively inviting him in to disrupt or interfere with the 2020 election. So they'll try to go with that again if President Trump wins, if he wins re-election. One final point. This was right at the tail end of the report as Shudo handed it back over to another reporter. Clip 8.
And you know, it's interesting, Poppy, in the readouts of those calls between Putin and Trump, often the Kremlin readout provides more detail than the White House readout of what those two leaders actually discussed. Oh, unusual.
Very. Raises a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. Jim, thank you for that reporting.
Very, very unusual. That does raise a lot of questions. And of course, CNN is there to give you the answers, as always. The answer, of course, is that the president is compromised and that Vladimir Putin is having his way with the U.S. election process. And he will again in 2020. And it will be a convenient excuse for them if they lose again. Well, we're also getting a few more details on the investigation of the investigators. John Durham continues with his investigation. Attorney General Barr, this goes back to, I think, Sunday's press briefing, the one that the president had with reporters. And here he is talking about this scam, as he calls it. Sam pointed out that, generally speaking, when President Trump would respond to those people that were trying to destroy his presidency, he often used the word sick, that these are sick people. But in this clip, he uses the word scum, I think twice, two or three times. You can listen for yourself here, clip 9.
But I will tell you, the whole thing turned out to be a scam, and it turned out to be a disgrace to our country. And it was a takedown of a duly elected president, and these people suffered greatly. General Flynn, I mean, what they did to him. And even the FBI said, and they had some, and nobody bigger fan of the FBI than me at the level of the people that really matter. But the top of the FBI was scum. And what they did to General Flynn, and you know it, and everybody knows it, was a disgrace. He was in the service for over 30 years. He ends up being a general and respected. Respected. And almost his first day in office, they come in with papers. They want to investigate him. Never happened before. And now the tables are turned. Investigate the investigators, I guess. These were crooked people. These are bad people. These are very dangerous people. You know what they are, though? They're scum. They're human scum.
So that's the president with some pretty strong words there for Jim Comey and Clapper and all these people that were spying on his campaign. And relying on, as you heard there, relying on fake news to run with their agenda, to create their narrative. The tables have turned. We'll probably have a fair bit more to cover on this story as we get into the summer months. This is yet another reason, by the way, that the radical left would love to see this pandemic be the only story from now until the election. It's not just their only hope to try to take down President Trump's reelection, but it also obscures this investigation of the investigators. I would just refer you again to just the timeliness of these Trumpet magazines, all of them coming out this year. So powerful. We've had the last couple of issues that have featured the coronavirus, but then before that, the radical transformation the one with the radical left on the cover. So you can go back from the start of this year, and the story has not been just the virus. You go back to some of the earth-shaking events from January with Iran, with Soleimani, and then on and on it goes. Right through to this point, what was that headline that said there's a perfect recipe here for global unrest? Well, I have a few extra minutes, and I should have brought, usually I have some emails tacked on to the end of my notes, but I don't have them today, so we will finish up just a few minutes earlier than usual. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to submit some email, hopefully I can read it at a later time. You can email us at td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.